The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Real good to be with you. My age is pretty much real good to be anywhere. This is E-Person Monday. This is where we, notice how I include you in this, linguistic charity, we tackle. Do you play tackle? I used to play tackle. I love to play tackle. I played tackle until I was in my early 30s. Foolish. But when you're that age, you think you're invulnerable. Until the day came where we were playing tackle, and somebody brought a guy who was just released from prison. I'm not making this up. Just released from prison. And we played tackle the quarterback. That was kind of, when we got out of playing full body tackle, no pads, of course, we played tackle the quarterback. You had to bring the quarterback down. Anybody else was double tap below the waist. I had my arms wrapped around the quarterback, and he hit me in the back of the head so hard that my teeth hit the forehead of the quarterback. Of course, put a gash in the quarterback and busted my tooth. That was the end of my tackle career. So, here, the only thing close I come is tackling emails. And one of these times, it's not even going to be tackling emails. It's going to be tapping, flagging emails. So we'll get to those in just a moment. But for now, where in the heck was I put this? I had this thing here. It was what I was going to do for my, there it is. Okay. Oh, yeah. I ran across a fantastic, well, okay, that's not a good word. An intriguing study done back when I was in grad school, and it has relevance to me now as an adoptive parent. There's a test called the MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory. It is a 550-question true-false test that gives what they call a profile. You don't necessarily look at a person's answers to all 550 questions. Their answers form a profile on the basis of what they answered true and what they answered false. And it's over generally 14 scales, although you can use different scales. It's a peak and valley kind of thing. If you looked at it, it would look like a jagged line, up down, depending upon how they scored on a particular scale, which measured certain aspects of personality or pathology. This particular study said, I thought this was fascinating, adopted children have a personality profile on the MMPI more in line with their biological parent than with their adoptive parent. Now, one would say, whoa, wait a minute. Given certain circumstances, this adopted child didn't come from the best of circumstances, or indeed there was a lot of risk factors involved here, and he went into a loving, caring home, a stable home. Would he not reflect the morals, the beliefs, the upbringing of the stable home as opposed to what he came from? Now, one would think so. here's how to account for this. The MMPI essentially measures personality traits, not necessarily particular in-depth moral perspectives. Personality traits or some type of pathology, if you want to use that word, struggles. So because of that, the personality traits of an adopted child are more in line with the personality traits of the biological parent as opposed to the adoptive parent. Now, that shouldn't scare adoptive parents, because you still have influence and you still have all kinds of heavy teaching ability, instruction. You could do this. But it dovetails with something that is pretty much a 101 finding in personality research. And that is, personality is pretty enduring throughout life. Certain qualities, certain traits, shyness, fieriness, social awkwardness. I mean, there's no limit to the amount of traits you can describe. And traits are just a big summary label of maybe a consistency of behavior across situations. They pretty much linger. If I'm shy at age 20, I'm probably going to be shy at age 70. Not always, but more often than not. If I tend to have, quote unquote, a temper, trip switch reaction to situations at age 16, there's a good chance I'm going to be that way at 30, 45, 70. There are two considerations here. One, with religious sensibility, with a desire to follow Christ, one can go a long way in altering a lot of those traits and how they show themselves. If, for example, a temper is a problem, and I realize that a temper is sinfulness, really, depending upon where it's manifest, then I have a motive as a follower of Christ to try to do something about that temper. I can't just simply say, yeah, I'm a fiery guy. If I don't have a religious sensibility, then the only real reason for me to work on self-improvement is that it would make my life better. It's not the only reason, but it's a major one. It'd make my life better. All right, I risk losing my wife if I don't start to control my temper. So that's my motive. Now, there's another factor into play here. And I think this frustrates people who have not only had a religious conversion, but it frustrates people who know people who have had a religious conversion. Let's say it's occurred at age 27, age 44. The kind of folks who listen to Catholic media, oftentimes they have a return to the faith or a significant elevation of the faith in their lives. Okay. Why then do they struggle saying, you know, I try so hard, I go to church, I go to confession, I pray, I try so hard, it just seems so tough for me to get rid of some of these ugly parts of my personality. It's so frustrating. I think I was happier before I became a faithful Christian, because at least then I didn't notice it, or it didn't bother me as much. Part of the reason for this, and you know the standard answer, sin nature. We have a sin nature, we're bent that way. And that's true. That is true. But if you want to get more specific about that sin nature, you have certain personality predispositions, certain ways of acting, of approaching life that linger. They're there. They're really the last things to be altered. A person who comes to the faith as an adult probably the first thing that they jettison is their heavy immorality. If, for example, I have impurities in my thinking or my actions, well, that could be one of the first things that my conversion really helps me overcome. If I have certain particular types of sinfulness that have plagued me, those are things that I now look at in a different moral lens. But personality, those broad-based aspects of who I am. For example, I'll use myself. I'm outgoing. If you attempted to measure me on personality scales, I'd be an extrovert. Okay. So let's say that I don't like always being an extrovert. I wish that I could be lower profile in certain social situations. Well, that's not going to be something that's going to be easy for me to conquer. Okay, because I have that bent that way. For whatever the reason, if you want to call it wiring, that's my predisposition. So that particular aspect of my personality is really very, very slow to change, even with God's grace. I guess I say this to help you over your frustration with yourself or with someone in your life that you're tempted to think, you know, they call themselves a Christian. They go to church and they do all these things, but they're still the way they were. Tolerance, mercy, recognition, and this is where psychology can help. The personality is perduring. Good word, ain't it? Good word. It means it sticks around a long time. It endures. And it is probably one of the slowest things to alter after a conversion. I'm Dr. Ray.
Don't touch that dial. Dr. Ray will be back.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
This Mother's Day, bless the Catholic mothers in developing countries who spend hours collecting drinking water, often from unsafe sources. With your support, Cross Catholic Outreach can provide these women and their children with access to clean, safe water. Help us lift the poor's burdens, protect their health, and restore their hope. Join by calling Cross Catholic Outreach at 888-766-2426 or visit crosscatholic.org/Ave Maria.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org. Dr. Ray Guarendi, thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. See Person Monday. No, that's not just a play on words. I just am very hesitant to say email. Why? Well, because some of these are from females. Maybe it could be email female Monday. I don't know. But we take on your missives, your communications, and attempt a devoted day to dealing with them. A lot of folks will say, I really can't call in because I'm too nervous, or I can't call in because people I know listen, or my favorite, I can't call in because I don't like you, Dr. Ray. That's one I get probably the most, I guess. I don't know. I'd have to count them up. I stopped counting at 500. Okay. This is from Annie. Dr. Ray, I'm worried because my son is constantly worrying. Well, one might say right there that, I don't want to go too far in this. Don't want to stretch too far, but could this be like a temperamental thing passed on from mom to kid? I don't know. We'll see. I'm a longtime listener and do not... This is really contrary. She said this. She says, I'm a longtime listener of the show, and I do not know what to do about my almost five-year-old. Annie, how could you be a longtime listener and not know? Have you not been listening? And she says, who worries about everything, and everything is in big caps. He's bright, social, funny, excels at sports, but he seems to literally obsess over little things that shouldn't even be an issue. All right, now first what you got here is you got this overall picture of a, by and large, pretty well-adapted kid. Bright, social, funny, good at sports. Now she gives some examples. She says, if we start the car, and we are not sitting buckled up in the front seat. Now, she says he panics and cries. Now, when I hear the word panics, I'm thinking of this intense hyper-arousal reaction. Okay, so that'd be the first thing I would ask Annie. If she was sitting in my office, I'd say, Annie, okay, you got to define panic for me. Does he just get upset? And she says he cries. Okay, so... what makes you think he panics? Does he start screaming and yelling? Is he, no, Bobby, no. All right, okay. Dr. Ray, you're nitpicking. I got to read between the lines on these things. Anytime we go to the museum, or last week we went to Disney World, and we have to park our stroller somewhere. Now, she must have a little one. He gets fixated on whether or not someone is going to take it. Okay, stop right there, Annie. He gets fixated. That means he constantly asks you, Mommy, is somebody going to take it? How do we know somebody's not going to take it? Should we stay right here, Mommy? Mommy, did you tie it up? Maybe we should just not leave, but Mommy... So when you say fixated, what you're telling me is probably that he's coming at you with all kinds of cries for reassurance. Now, I got to know how you respond to that, Annie. Okay? So I'm going to give you a suggestion on that in a second. But my experience is that most loving, caring parents, when they say a kid gets fixated, what's their first response? They try to reassure him. And in reassuring him, they go to extreme. They try to calm him down, and they keep responding to every one of his irrational questions. When we go to a store, he will ask a few times if someone took our car. Do you answer him, Annie? I took him for a bike ride last night, and at one point he wanted to turn around and go the other way so he didn't have to ride over a storm drain. I hope he didn't turn around and go the other way, Annie. Doesn't sound like it did. He constantly worries that things are going to blow away in the wind, even if it is a still day. Cars? Heavy stuff? Okay, now here's where Annie kind of expresses her puzzlement. My son has never experienced any sort of trauma in his life. His dad and I have never had a big fight that has worried him. And the only out-of-home care he has ever received is part-time preschool. So I don't understand why he's always been such a big worrier. I'll tell you right now, and it goes with something I said in my monologue, Annie. It's the way he's wired. It's who your kid is. That's why. See, you're looking for some kind of psychological explanation as to why he's out of the norm. You take 105-year-olds, his extent of worry, his extremeness in getting anxious may be in the top 5%. All right. Now, you didn't cause that. It's the way he's wired. It's who he is. However, you're probably unwittingly doing things to keep it going at a level higher than it needs be. I mean, I don't think there's anything you can do as a parent that is going to make him not be a kind of an uptight sort of kid. I don't know that. I saw some research said that about 50% of kids who are nervous like that outgrow it. About 50. All right. So, what else we got here? For a while, I was worried he was on the autism spectrum. You see, Annie, what you're doing? You're starting to interpret. I know it's hard to just simply say that's who my kid is, and I'm going to deal with it. His pediatrician has never seemed to think this was the case. And the more I read, neither do I. So I am more baffled than ever. Don't be. That's who your kid is. Annie, I had 10 kids, all by different parents, with the exception of a couple twins and a couple half-brothers and sisters. Children are adopted. Their personalities are wildly diverse, not reflecting anything of the way early on that my wife and I were raising them. We had some feisty ones. We had some shy ones. We had some aggressive ones. We had some oblivious ones. We had some very, very, very intellectually adept ones, and we had some ones who struggled. Just all over the map. Okay, now here's where she's getting nervous. Annie. My side of the family does have a long history of mental problems. And then she says, I have always been anxious. Annie, remember what I said about adopted kids are more likely to have a personality profile on the MMPI like their biological parents as opposed to their adopted parents? Well, I'm not saying this is your adopted kid. This is your bio kid. So he probably has a little bit of his mom's temperament in him. Okay, she says, I'm concerned for my son because, and then she lists some relatives who have had some struggles in life. I have your show on every day. All right, Annie. So that means you're going to hear this. Okay. Don't worry. I'll tell you which one it is. She says, please tell me which Monday. Here's what's happening, Annie. You're probably doing too much reassuring. Your son will come to see that all of his what-ifs and worries are not going to happen. No, honey, we're not turning around. If we're not going to ride over that storm drain, we don't have to. We can go around it. However, when we go into that grocery store, I'm not going to answer any questions about somebody stealing our car. I'm just not going to answer them. Or if we get into the car and you throw a major league upset because the car's going to roll forward, I'm not even going to respond to you. I'm not going to try to calm you down. I'm not going to say, we're fine. You see, I've got it in D, and D means that mommy's controlled. I got my foot on the brake. No. You've done all that. All that's doing is taking his natural uptight, if you will, temperament, and letting him run with it. He needs to see that all of these things that he fears at age 5 are not going to happen. This is nothing to be worried about. If he says, I know, but that, you know, mama, we have in the front yard, it's going to blow away. Yep, it might, son. We'll see. But what if it does, Mom? What if it does? I don't want it to blow away. What if it does? And you just kind of look at him. I gave you an answer, son. This is probably the number one thing that parents do to keep something like this going. They attempt to reassure. And Annie, because you're all worried about this, you're worried this is a sign of some kind of deeper psychological maladjustment. But you just told me he was bright, social, funny, all those things. Probably not a worry at all.
Are you as confused due to the way the media dispenses information? I mean the overload, the sheer speed of it all. Take the recent Comey Sessions hearings. Now, my point here has nothing to do with politics and everything to do with complexity of the way the story is sold. Former FBI director testified about leaks and memos about leaking and vice versa. Then Mr. Sessions recalled recusing himself and is now doubling down on the Mueller investigation, made all the worse by the president's tweets in light of the accusations of collusion with Russia because of what Senator Feinstein said about the email server used during the Benghazi situation. Am I the only one lost in this tsunami of high-speed, half-baked information? Let's start with learning the founding principles of America before we jump onto the apocalyptic frenzy machine known as the media industrial complex. I'm Patrick Coffin of PatrickCoffin.media. Be a saint. What else is there?
Mother Angelica's classic talks on heaven have long been an EWTN family favorite. Now you can have Mother's beloved teachings at your fingertips with What is Heaven?
I got to get you to the place you want to think of the glory that is to come, the absolute joy.
What is Heaven by Mother Angelica, now available for the first time in print. Visit EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are
committed. As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
It's such a pleasure to speak with you. Someone intelligent on radio. Yay!
Now, people oftentimes ask me, Dr. Ray, how do you deal with the stress in your life? Well, all right, let me give you an example. Typically, when I've come from the office in the morning, I come over to the studio, and I get a diet Mountain Dew with a little bit of regular cherry Pepsi or cherry Coke in it, just to kind of kill the diet taste. And sometimes the drink that I have sitting beside me is finished. I finish it before the show is over, leaving a couple of pretzels there with nothing to drink with my pretzels. Now, for the first two or three years of the program, this was a lot of stress. And I talked to EWTN, I talked to Abe, and I said, I don't know if I can continue to do the show, if this continues to happen. But I've dealt with it. I really dealt with it. I think that that's something that I need to just pull myself up by the bootstraps. I'm still not happy about it when I run out of drink before I run out of pretzels. But, you know, I'm moving ahead as a person, and I think that's important. I truly do. All right, E-Person Monday. This is tough. This is one of those family situations, and I know I'm not going to get through this before the hard break coming up. It's one of those family situations that, oh gosh, somebody's going to get mad because you're making a request that is well within your rights to make. This is not a matter of I'm going to poll 100 people and I'm going to find out that more are on my side than your side. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with, do you have the right to make this decision? That's it. All right. Dr. Ray, I've asked my brother, who was baptized a Catholic and fallen away for many years, to be the godfather to my firstborn son. He has now, thankfully, come back to the church, attends weekly mass, absolutely refuses to go to confession. Now, see, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Now, if you look at the folks who take the Eucharist at mass, it's virtually 95%. And, of course, this brother fallen away Catholic. Means he didn't go to Mass. Means he probably pretty much lived on his own moral terms. So one could assume that he really does need to go to confession because he's got a lot of stuff there that he might do well to confess. But he says, no, not gonna. Not gonna happen. My terms. Not the church's terms. My terms. I asked him to be godfather with a stipulation that he has to go to confession first. He absolutely refuses and was enraged that I asked him such a thing. How dare you here, Dad? Now, one might ask, why would he be so enraged that you asked this? You know why, Mike. He took it personally. How dare you imply that he's not good enough to be a godfather to your son? Who do you think you are? You know that's how he's thinking it. He's got to be enraged. Why couldn't he just say, no, I'm not going to do it. I just don't want to. No, he's not saying that. He went nuts. Anytime somebody overreacts like that, when you make a request that is within your purview to make, you know their interpretation of it is really, really personal. He said, quote, he confesses his sins each night, and that if not going to confession means he will go to purgatory or hell, then so be it. Woo! That tells you a little bit about mindset, doesn't it? Hey, I don't care if I'm going to hell. Yikes! Which, again, I'm glad that his brother has come back to the church to the degree that he has, but it sure sounds like his brother's making his own rules, and he gets mad that anybody would dare, including the church, tell him. It says here, I've been reading the catechism to try to find out where it says you have to be a Catholic in good standing. My family feels like I am saying that my brother is not good enough of a person, and I don't think he is fit to be godfather to my son. There it is. There it is. Well, ideally, the godfather is a person who will help the parents in some way, either through prayer or directly, guide this child in the faith. And if the parents somehow don't leave the scene, then the godparent, ideally, should be a person to do this. I think brother would say, yeah, I mean, I want somebody that is obedient to the church. I'm trying to stand on the fact that if my wife and I pass away, I need him to teach our son the faith the way it is written and not the faith the way it is interpreted by him or how he feels it should be followed or what he needs to do or not do. I think that's very legitimate. Now, the second part of the equation is he going to do it? No. At least at this point, he's not. So, you're well within reason. You're well within your faithful purview to say, well, this is what I'm looking for in a godparent. I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm not saying you're evil. I'm not saying you're going to hell. I'm just simply saying that for what I'm looking for as a godparent, this is what I wish. Now, Mike, have you been that straight with him? If you haven't, do it. Be that straight with him. And I think it's also reasonable for you to say, well, if you can't, I understand. That's okay. I'll look elsewhere. Now, the fact that neither he, nor your family concurs with you on this does tell you something, doesn't it? It's the old, probably the majority of Catholics nowadays, or people who take the name Catholic, on my terms, the way I define it, the way I want to do it. And if it interferes with my desires or the way that I choose to go, then the church loses. Ay, ay, ay. The situation has thrown a wedge into the family. I'm the bad guy, expecting too much. God is of love, mercy, and forgiveness, and it doesn't matter if he goes to confession or not. Well, the sad thing of it is they're wrong. Mike, you know that. They're wrong. I don't know. It sounds to me like if you stand your ground on this, you're going to, yeah, they're going to be alienated. I don't know how they'll choose to repair it. No matter how you explain to them, it has nothing to do with whether I think you're bad, evil people. Nothing. It's what I'm looking for in a godparent that is faithful to the teaching of the church. I'm going to deal with this a little bit more when, on the other side of the break. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is E-Person Monday.
Bishop Robert Barron.
Find out in any cultural situation, who's the Lord? There's somebody or some principle, some figure, some institution that has central importance in that culture. Whether it's king, whether it's the military, who knows what it is, go up and down the centuries. What's the Lord? The declaration of the Lordship of Jesus will always be a challenge to whatever that reigning Lord happens to be. The Lord today is my personal freedom. I decide what my life is. I decide who I am. I decide everything from my gender to the ultimate meaning of my life. Now that personal freedom is so powerful that it's become the Lord. To evangelize the culture is therefore to challenge them and to say, no, no, it's not your own ego, not your own freedom that's Lord. Jesus determines the meaning of your life. Jesus is the center of your life, not your own freedom.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What sins should Catholics mention in confession? According to the Catechism, we are obliged to confess serious sin at least once a year. A mortal sin must be confessed and sacramental absolution received before taking communion, unless there is a very grave reason for receiving communion and there is no possibility of going to confession. Confessing all the sins a penitent can remember undoubtedly places him or her before the divine mercy for pardon. If, however, a penitent knowingly withholds sins, he places nothing before the divine goodness for remission through the priest. Confessing venial sins is not strictly necessary, but is strongly urged by the Church in order to fight evil tendencies, to strengthen our conscience, and let ourselves be healed by Christ. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism. Thank you for listening.
Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Thank you for joining me on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. This is E-Person Monday, where I take on, tackle, and, okay, in a little more sensitive language, address the emails that I receive from folks. This is something that I started into before the break. I'll just summarize it real quickly. And those of you who weren't here before the break, you know who you are, so don't blame me if there are gaps in your psychological makeup. This is from Mike. He wanted his brother to be godfather to his son. The brother came back to the Catholic Church going to Mass, but refuses to go to confession. And he was gone for a while. So, yeah, one would say, according to what the Church would teach, yes, you need to go to confession to reconcile with the Church. Well, brother says no. But he didn't just say no. In the words of Michael, he became enraged. Which means that the implication is, of course, you're saying I'm not good enough. How dare you? Well, now Mike says the whole family's mad at him. All right? Because they're saying he's the bad guy. And God is love, mercy, forgiveness, and it doesn't matter about confession. Well, it really doesn't if that's what you declare. But if you're going to be a faithful Catholic, it matters infinitely for the well-being of your soul. Okay. So, Mike is now facing a conundrum. He really very much wants his brother, ideally, to be someone who would take over the faithful teaching of the Catholic Church should something happen to him and his wife. He goes on, though I agree that God grants love and mercy, I also realize that confession is one of the foundational teachings and a mandatory sacrament, especially if you are taking Holy Communion. Is it wrong to deny someone the opportunity to be a godfather if they are not in good standing with the church? No! As I said before the break, Mike, this is your decision. You have every right to make this decision. You have every right to choose who you wish to be godfather to your son. What you will have to live with is the consequences of that decision. Clearly, these people are not going to allow you to, quote-unquote, dictate to them what you would like in a godfather. You aren't permitted to do that, Mike. Don't you understand that? So, the bottom line, excuse the cliche, is that you are well within your faithful purview to say, these are my ideals for a godfather, and indeed, these are the ideals of the Catholic Church. So, if you choose not to go to confession, if you choose not to reconcile with our church, if you simply say, I'm a good and wonderful person because I say so, that's between you and God. I would say, give yourself a chance to explain your reasoning and thinking to your family, and hopefully there will be some of them reasonable enough in this matter to say, I don't agree with it, but he does have every right to do this. The teaching of the church is black and white. I've talked to many priests. Some say I am right, and some say I am wrong in what I asked. My ultimate question is, am I wrong? You see, Mike, the question here, I don't think, is, are you wrong? The question is, do you have a right to do this? And you do. If I might draw an uneven parallel, let's say a parent says, I don't want a TV in our house. I don't want a computer in our house. And everybody in their family says, what, are you nuts? Come on, this is the 21st century. What is wrong with you? Well, as a parent, in your decisions, you have the right to be wrong. This is your house. You can say, I don't want a TV, I don't want a computer. You can say that. You're allowed. Whether I agree with that or I don't is irrelevant. You can say, this is what I choose. This is my selection of a godfather. This, for me, is what I wish. See, you know what's happening here? All too often, godparents become kind of a tokenism. Well, you know, we haven't asked my brother. Well, let's ask him. Oh, let's see, who else? Who do we know that's a Catholic? Yeah, the neighbor lady. She's a nice lady. Let's ask her to be a godmother. That's what it's become in so many respects. And you're saying, no, I want it to be more than that. I had a dear friend ask me one time. It was either to be a best man or a groomsman in his marriage. He was raised Catholic. He was in a minor seminary. He drifted from the church, and he went into, I think he was getting married a second time. He had been divorced from his first wife, married a second time in a small, I believe it was a Methodist chapel. I said no. Now, he was gracious about it. The friendship didn't end because I did that. He has since reconciled with the church, and in fact, he is a deacon in the church. So, all of that worked out, but he didn't get angry at me. He didn't take it as I was saying, oh, you wretched, rotten sinner. I'm not going to be in the same place with you because I don't want to get struck by lightning when you get struck by lightning. I guess, Mike, I would say maybe you could talk to your mom first, your dad first, your sisters first, whomever, and say, look, this has nothing to do with my brother. This has nothing to do with me saying he's not a holy guy. It has to do with me saying I'm looking at this Godfather role as something very, very important. And I would like it to be as in line with the teachings of the church as I can. I'm Dr. Ray.
This Mother's Day, bless the Catholic mothers in developing countries who spend hours collecting drinking water, often from unsafe sources. With your support, Cross Catholic Outreach can provide these women and their children with access to clean, safe water. Help us lift the poor's burdens, protect their health, and restore their hope. Join by calling Cross Catholic Outreach at 888-766-2426 or visit crosscatholic.org/Ave Maria.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria mutual funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. I want to announce that Steve Ray and I will be going on pilgrimage to the great land of Poland, August 21st to August 30th.
We're going
to
follow John Paul II, Maria Faustina and the Divine Mercy, and Maximilian Kolbe. We're even going to visit Auschwitz and see the place where Maximilian Kolbe gave his life in the cell there.
People can get more information at AveMariaRadio.net. And where else, Steve?
CatholicConvert.com. Click on the big pilgrimage banner or call 866-468-468. 1420.
Join today's discussion and engage with producers on the Ave Maria Radio Facebook and Twitter accounts at Ave Maria Radio. Respond to interviews and learn who's coming up on Crest in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, and other Ave Maria Radio programs. Make it easier by downloading the Ave Maria app on your smart devices. Then just tap on the Facebook and Twitter icons to get plugged in on the things that matter most. That's the Ave Maria Radio app or at Ave Maria Radio. Build the church. Bless the nations.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Who's In. Appreciate the company. We usually devote a Monday to the email that comes in. One or 200 a month at least of emails that I receive. Many, I always try to respond to them in some short way, but in terms of going into the depth of the details that I can on an e-person Monday, it's not possible. Not when I type 9 words a minute. I can backspace a lot faster than that. Dr. Ray, I happened to see you on Facebook answering the question from someone about when elderly parents will not leave their home when they refuse. And this is very common, by the way, very common. And there's two factors involved in this. Is one, of course, this is their life. For many, this is where they've lived 40, 50, 60, 70 years. This is where they raise their children. This is everything. This is who they are. So as a result, them giving up that independence, those memories, that history, very, very tough, understandably so. The other factor involved is that almost always, when their adult children are attempting to convince them to leave their home, they're dealing with someone whose intellectual capacity is not what it was. Dementia is usually at some point setting in, probably maybe past mild, heading toward moderate. So there are judgment problems, there are personality problems, there are health problems. She goes on. This is exactly what I am facing with my dad, who is 88. He keeps saying he's just fine. When obviously, if the neighbor boy has to pick you off the ground when you are trying to do yard work, you're not fine. And you fall in the garage after trying to get groceries in the house on a minus 20 degree day after you've not taken any pills that morning, No, you are not fine. He has recovered from many instances, but what will it be next time? Okay, stop right there, Jody. That's right. Typically, maybe not typically. Commonly, though, not unusual for a situation to hit a crisis point. Elderly parent gets hurt, falls, misjudges, sets a house on fire, wanders off. Something that jeopardizes their well-being occurs. At that point, it is no longer a decision of the elderly parent that the adult children are forced to make that decision. Now, sometimes the dementia is at a point where the elderly parent is not all that resistant. They don't quite understand what is happening. At other times, they're quite resistant, but it has to be mandated. I live about 6 hours away. My brother lives in the same town. He's going to talk with Dad. Okay. I suspect he already has a bunch of times. I don't know what he'll say this time that'll make any difference. Here's what Jody says. He's going to tell Dad, you need to get in-home help or go to assisted living. No more reasoning with him anymore. That's where it often gets to. When my mother-in-law had to be moved from her home to ours, she was in a stage of dementia where she didn't quite understand that after she came to our house that she even had a home anymore. She didn't remember it. She didn't understand it. She was living pretty much in the moment, and just stuff of yesterday was gone. Now she remembered the very, very far distant past, which is very much the way it is. And memory psychologists will tell you, biologists will tell you, neurologists will tell you that that's oftentimes because the structure of the brain carries those memories and not the chemicals that are short term. Jody says, two choices here. I don't know how this is going to work. That's right, Jody, you don't. You don't know how your dad's going to react. My father will have to sell his house and use his extra money in savings, which we have told him is okay with us. Right. In other words, she's essentially saying, Dad, this is for your care. This is to not leave us an inheritance. Dad doesn't want to spend any money. Well, again, Jody, you're probably dealing with an incipient dementia, an irrationality, that the idea that I don't want to spend any money. This is often the case with elderly. They get very, very, very penurious. In other words, they hoard their money because they no longer understand the context of what's going on. All right. We have been working on this for the last 3 months. Trying to be nice, reasonable. That's not working. My dad, who has always taken care of us and been in control, now will not let us make decisions and help him. Just listening to your answer on Facebook makes it make sense. Well, Jody, I hope I've added a little bit more to this, because I think you're right. It routinely comes down to the decision that has to be made outside of the elderly parents. They don't grasp why they have to leave home. My mother-in-law still wanted to drive. Absolutely no way she should drive. We disconnected certain parts of her engine, rendering the car immobile. And when she came out and she couldn't get it started, we said, boy, Mom, we'll have to take a look at it and see what's going on here. We don't understand what's happening going on here. And, of course, she just let it slide because she didn't understand and she forgot, and that was it. So in your dad's situation, maybe an intermediate step is in-home aid. Somebody come in. That would be easier, getting him to cooperate than it would be to having him leave the house. And I don't know what you're describing here is assisted living or something a little more supervisory. A lot of details need to be answered. I'm Dr. Ray. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate very much the company on this E-Person Monday. Good Lord permitting, we'll see you tomorrow where we can talk face-to-face. No, that's ear-to-ear. Yeah, we only talk face-to-face on television. Walk with God. Hold your children tightly by the hand. Which hand? I don't know. Whichever one's not sweaty.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.